Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's weekly wrap-up. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in our chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. I'm told to check the phone system, so let me go to Todd. Todd, can you hear me okay?
I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. So our phone system is working. Folks, before we get started with the news, I received an email that I wanted to address because I think it's we need to clear up some misconceptions here. I received an email from someone who did not give me the permission to give their name, so I'm not going to give their name. But basically, they said that they were very confused about why we, quote-unquote, shit on the smaller wrestlers and the high flyers when they're among his favorites and the most exciting, and some of the bigger wrestlers are slow and plodding and clumsy, and he doesn't care for that style of wrestling. So I wanted to clear that up because obviously you don't listen very closely to this show. I've said on many occasions that Pete Dunne was one of my favorite wrestlers. I've said on many, many occasions that Daniel Bryan was one of my favorite wrestlers. And my current favorite wrestler is AJ Styles. And I would say all of them fall into the smaller than normal wrestling category. And I have, and Shawn Michaels is my all-time favorite wrestler. And he wasn't exactly a giant. I think you're mistaking what we're saying about ring psychology with size. Of course there's a place in wrestling for the high flyers. Of course there's a place for people like Ricochet and those types. My problem is not with their size. My problem is with their psychology and lack of it. In other words, if Ricochet is fighting a large guy, say that large guy did all the things Ricochet did. He did the springboards, the moonsaults, everything else, right? Let's say he was like a Keith Lee type, and he just showed Ricochet right up. Ricochet would have a fit. Ricochet would say, well, that's my thing, man. And, you know, if you can do it at your size, it's more impressive than me doing it at my size, so really you're just shitting on me. Ring psychology says that's a horrible thing to do. Okay, well, then the reverse is also true. And if you're Ricochet, you can't stand toe-to-toe with a Brock Lesnar and throw punches because that's Brock Lesnar's thing. And if you're equal to the task there, then you're shitting all over him, right? So you can't have it both ways. If you want your high-flying and your aerobatic stuff and your acrobatic gymnastic stuff to be your gimmick, that's fine. But if a bigger guy comes and does the same things or close to the same things and going to be more impressive, you're going to get mad. So why wouldn't a guy whose thing is, you know, I throw hands and I'm big and powerful and strong, why wouldn't that guy get mad if you're standing toe-to-toe with him in a fist fight? It's the same thing. So my problem is not with their size. My problem is with their psychology. Now, to his credit, and I don't know if he's been coached backstage or he's just starting to learn. To his credit, Ricochet is starting to do more of that. Ricochet is now not doing as much of the, I'll stand toe-to-toe and fight you, but I'll also do my flippity-flop stuff. He mostly now tries to run the person, and when they catch him, he usually does sell, being more powerful or whatever. But he didn't used to. Finn Balor still doesn't. Finn Balor still doesn't to this day. He still doesn't. So, yeah, I do have a problem with that. You see, the thing is this. You can't be a little guy with a big man mentality. Because if you are, it kind of usurps the whole reason that there is psychology in professional wrestling. I don't want to see, you know, who started this, and he was a fairly big guy by today's standards. I'll tell you who started this. To a certain extent, Bret Hart. Bret Hart would stand toe-to-toe with The Undertaker, punch for punch, and he's just like, well, come on. Yeah, okay, Bret's 5'11", 240, 230. That's 6'8", 3-something. Shawn Michaels never did that. Watch the matches. Shawn Michaels would come in there and throw like 6 punches at The Undertaker, who would no-sell. The Undertaker would swat him away like a mosquito, and he'd go flying over the top rope and land on his ass, realize, oops, that was a mistake, and then he'd start trying to take the legs out. He'd start trying to run them. He'd start trying to wear them down. There was ring psychology there. When I see Finn Balor just run headlong at, you know, Otis and start throwing punches, I'm like, well, I don't know. Then, you know, if this is the way it's going to be, then, yeah, I don't like it. So to the person who wrote us, we do not shit on the smaller wrestlers. Like I said, I love Pete Dunne. Love Daniel Bryan. AJ Styles is one of my favorite wrestlers. But watch the psychology of all three of them, and you will see that they clearly embody a smaller wrestler's psychology. They clearly realize, well, when I'm in there against a bigger guy, I have to play it differently than when I'm in there against a smaller guy. Now, I would invite everyone who thinks I'm wrong about this to go watch Shawn Michaels versus Rey Mysterio from many years ago. Shawn Michaels was very used to being the smallest guy, so his gimmick was usually the same. He would try to wear down his opponent. He would try to take their legs out. He would try to, you know, gas them. He'd get caught, get smashed around like a, you know, fly in a hurricane, run away, go back to doing his wear downs. That was his psychology. He couldn't do that with Ray. It wouldn't make any sense for Ray to be more powerful and dominating that way. So you know what Shawn Michaels did? Shawn Michaels did the opposite. Shawn Michaels played that, well, I'm quick, but he's quicker. He's more acrobatic. It's very hard for me to catch him. The things that I normally do, the wear down tactics, the whatevers, and I'm working on him because he's got as good a cardio, if not better than mine, and I've got myself in the position where now I'm the guy that's being wore down. I'm the guy that he's running from and, you know, taking the legs out and doing everything, and I can't catch him. That's because Shawn Michaels understood psychology. I watch Finn Balor constantly defy psychology and wrestle like he's 6'2", 6'4", 250, 260, and I don't like it. Now, if you happen to like that style of wrestling, that's fine. We've always said on this show, whatever you enjoy, you enjoy. We're here to give you our opinions. You're more than welcome to call with your opinions. But don't mischaracterize what I said or what my panel said, because none of us have ever said, not one time, that there's no place for the smaller in the business. There is. But you have to teach them the proper psychology, and you have to teach them that no, you are not Andre the Giant. No, you are not The Undertaker. No, you are not Brock Lesnar. You have to wrestle the way you look. And you have to sell accordingly. How would you like it? I mean, none of the wrestlers will do this because none of them are that bad. But how would you like it if Otis came flying off the ropes with a shoulder block to Finn Balor and they just stand off? Now, if you're Otis and you can't do all those fancy Finn Balor moves, you say, well, you're killing my moves. You're totally destroying the things that I can do. You're not selling my stuff. So why should I sell yours? Well, nobody's done that. But what I'm saying is, subtly, sometimes they do. When they stand toe-to-toe, when they appear to be, well, I'm just about as strong. I'm just about as tough. I'm just about as good in a fist fight. No, no, you're not. You can't do that. When you're in a wrestling ring, the very first thing you have to do, at least this is what I always did, I found out who my opponent is. Normally, I knew him anyway. But if I didn't know a lot, I'd find out, well, what is it what's supposed to be their thing? They're supposed to be this massively strong person, this high-flying whatever, this scientific wizard or brawler. What are they supposed to be? What do I have to sell? What is it about this guy that I have to sell? If it's his scientific knowledge, fine. Then I'll let him out-wrestle me, and I'll just throw hands. If it's he's supposed to be a better brawler, fine. Then I'll try to wear him down, and he'll punch me and kick me and whatever. He's supposed to be stronger, I'll sell he's stronger. He's supposed to be faster, I'll sell he's faster. Give me the thing I have to sell. But God damn it, you better sell what I'm because if you don't, I'm not selling yours. And this is what I see. I see these guys coming up in independence federations where everybody's about 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", 180, and they think, oh, well, that's okay. This is what I did in the indies. I stood toe-to-toe with all the guys in the indies, so I'll stand toe-to-toe with all the guys in the major fed. No. No. Wrestling schools should be teaching the psychology of professional wrestling ahead of almost everything else except how to take a bump, how to land. Your basics come first, but then psychology has to come second. People must have skipped the class. So, yeah, there are what you would call smaller wrestlers I have a problem with. But not because they're small, because their psychology is horrible. So, Mike, I hope that clears that up.
Yeah, I hope so. Look, one of my favorite wrestlers right now is Darby Allin. He's not a big guy, right? And it has definitely helped him out that they put Sting with him because obviously he's learned a lot from Sting, right? Obviously. So he's one of my favorite wrestlers right now is Darby Allin, as is, you know, as is Hook, as it and I'm going to name a bunch of guys that are smaller guys now, Hook, Darby Allin, people like that, that are my favorite wrestlers. And classically, I mean, the entire Guerrero family weren't big guys. Hector, Chavo, Mondo, you know, Chavo Jr., and, of course, Eddie. They were never big guys. They got it, though.
Yeah, the psychology is the thing. That's the thing. Tom, it has nothing to do with the size of the person. Pete Dunne sells that he does this joint manipulation, and he comes at you like a little pit bull, but usually he gets slapped away by the bigger guy.
Yeah, for sure. Pete Dunne is great because he focuses on that, you know, tries to break your fingers or, you know, tries to snap your ankle. That's a psychology thing it can't be taught. That's just there. I think he had it regardless. With guys like Finn Balor and even CM Punk, Finn Balor has zero psychology. And dare me to say, and I'm going to say it anyway, I'll catch a little heat for this, but I had a big problem with Sami Zayn kicking out of everything at WrestleMania versus the Usos. How many times did you kick out?
Yeah, I know.
You know, you're not the Undertaker. I have a huge problem with that. That's not psychology. You took psychology that you did have, and you tossed it out the window. Now, I get it that Sami Zayn is maybe just a little bit smaller than the Usos, or maybe the same size. But the psychology of being nailed with their finisher or their setup several times during the course of the match, you're not Superman. Finn Balor constantly fights like he's the Undertaker. And it's not believable, and it's not fun to watch. His finishing move is absolute garbage. It's the stupidest move in professional wrestling. And even the sling blade is kind of dumb.
If you take a look in your wrestling history, you'll find that I think, anyway, the first person I could ever locate that did that finishing maneuver was a guy named Pepper Gomez, who I never saw wrestle. But I did see clips of him. I guess he was way, way back. And he would do that stomp off the top rope, or maybe it was the second rope. I don't know. But basically, he did that same Finn Balor finisher. And to be honest with you, it's only going to finish off people who are the same size or maybe a tiny bit bigger or smaller. So you're going to tell me that that move would finish off Otis. What it should do is springboard you like you just landed on a trampoline. That's all it really should do. See, a really good finishing maneuver is a finishing maneuver that will finish anyone equally. A lousy finishing maneuver is one that you say, well, if it was a bigger guy, it wouldn't work. Right? That's lousy finishing maneuvers. So let's talk about finishing maneuvers that work. Doesn't matter how big you are. As a matter of fact, the bigger you are, the worse it is if you get tombstone pile driven, right? Curb stomp, your head is your head. RKO, your neck is your neck. Now, RKO, you might argue, would be a little less successful on a guy with a big, huge, thick neck like a Brock Lesnar or something, but for the most part, RKO. All the submission holds like the calf crusher, Styles Clash, all those things. Those are good finishers because they would work. Even Sami Zayn's Haluva kick. You get kicked dead in the face by a guy who's 215 pounds running as fast as he can. That'd probably finish you off. But there are some finishing maneuvers that you're just like, well, how is that logical when the guy is so much bigger than you? That's a problem. So, yeah, I'm a big stickler for psychology. If you are a regular listener to this show, you know that I'm a stickler for ring psychology. The minute I see something that does not make sense, I zone out because I say, okay, now I no longer can suspend my disbelief. I no longer can enjoy this because I don't believe they're fighting anymore. See, modern wrestling fans look at it and say, I know they're not really fighting, so I'm just going to watch and see what the pace of the match is and how good each move lands and if their flow is good. That's not the right way to enjoy wrestling. You're not a wrestling scout. You're a fan. If you're a scout, then I guess that's what you do. If you're a wrestling fan, you sit there and you say, for the next 3 hours, 2 hours, whatever the hell it happens to be, I am totally going to immerse myself in this as though it is reality. And the minute I get shaken from that reality, then it's ruined for me. It's almost like the magician who screws up the trick and you see how it's done. And then you're like, well, that ruined that trick, right? I don't want you ruining any tricks. I want you to make it as believable as possible so it's very easy for all fans to not sit there and say, let's rate his super kick. Let's see what the pacing of the match and his ring placement is. You're not a wrestling scout. Watch it as a fan. I hear so many people say, oh, the bloodline angle is so great, and Jey Uso does such a great job. Well, why does he do a great job? You know why he does a great job? Because you believe him. You're not sitting there saying, his acting ability in this particular line was very adequate, but I thought he fell short on this. No, you're not doing that. You're watching it saying, this sounds real. And so you believe it's real. And you say, wow. And that's what immerses you, whether you know it or not. See, I don't think a lot of modern wrestling fans understand the real magic of professional wrestling. The real magic of professional wrestling is even though you know it is not on the level, you can easily be convinced it is, and you can easily feel that goose flesh on you when a really good moment happens, and you're like, whoa. Right? Jey Uso super kicking Roman Reigns is whoa. So this is the thing. You have to have good ring psychology. Without this good ring psychology, a great match means nothing. Todd, it's extraordinarily important, and I'm surprised that so many people don't see that.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, these so-called wrestling fans think it's pretty cool to have a smaller guy to fight a big guy in the ring. And to be honest with you, I don't think so.
Wow, you got this static on that phone for some reason today. But anyway, even Cody Rhodes gets it. And Cody Rhodes is not a small guy. He's not a giant. He's not a small guy. But what did he do when he fought Brock Lesnar? Did he stand toe-to-toe with him? No, he didn't. Yes, he punched him a few times and everything once he had him wore down. but he tried his best to stay with the more agile scientific stuff and keep Brock Lesnar's strength to a minimum. Lesnar was cut loose. He sold all that stuff. As I'm not sitting here hanging with him. It's not going to happen. I promise you, if that was Finn Balor, he'd hang with him. I just don't like it. So, no, it has nothing to do with the size. It has to do with the psychology. And that goes for the big guys, too. I've said this about Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross is a pretty big guy. He oversells. Rey Mysterio gives him a drop kick, and it's, I'm over the top rope, and I've hit the apron, and I'm on my head, and I'm dizzy, and why? You're a big dude. Back up 3 steps and look annoyed at the drop kick. I know Rey's a legend, but you're trying to make your name for yourself, too. You're a big dude. Don't not sell. Don't do a no sell. Don't oversell it either. So it can happen with the big guys, too. Anyway, you know, Monday night we said that Vince McMahon changed the script for the Seth Rollins Open Challenge, that originally Seth Rollins was going to face someone, and we thought it was going to be The Miz, and might have had a Finn Balor interference. It was not going to be The Miz. Going to be Tommaso Ciampa. And according to what I'm being told, Tommaso Ciampa was going to come very close to beating Seth Rollins on several occasions. And the match was going to end in a non-ending, which means probably Finn Balor was going to come out and interfere. But it was going to solidify that Tommaso Ciampa belongs right up there with the likes of Seth Rollins, who he came a hair's length away from beating. Vince McMahon changed that and said, let's just have Finn Balor do the attack in the beginning, injure Seth Rollins, and we'll go from there. Well, this means one of two things. This means Vince is, in fact, in a position where he overrides all creative. He can override any creative he wants. So for the all intent and purposes, Vince McMahon is back as head of creative. He can put Triple H as head of creative all he wants. But if every single decision can be overridden by just saying, nope, I don't want that, then you're technically the head of creative. You may not be coming up with the ideas, countering the ideas. I want this to happen. No, instead this is going to happen. Okay, well, then you're the head of creative. Now, I know a lot of people who say, well, that would have helped Tommaso Ciampa so much, and Tommaso Ciampa would then be elevated to the level of Seth Rollins, and that would have been great. I disagree. Tommaso Ciampa needs to do a slow build-up. He's also a small guy. I know Seth isn't huge either, but the bottom line is Tommaso Ciampa needs a slow buildup. Just having him come back and almost beat Seth Rollins doesn't make him a star. Coming back and working his way up and beating people week after week after week consistently, that makes him a star. So looking back on it, I have to say that my initial reaction is correct. I still think Vince McMahon's idea is better than Triple H's. Triple H wants to elevate Tommaso Ciampa, do it, but do it slowly. Because we remember the Tommaso Ciampa that left here before he was injured. And he wasn't a world beater, and he wasn't a top contender for a title. And if you want to make him that's fine, but do it slowly. You don't say, well, you know, Tozawa's been a comedy act for a while. We're going to keep him off TV for 2 months, and then he's going to come out here and almost beat Roman Reigns. Have him beat 9 times. Match ends in a double countout. No one would believe that. Why would you believe that? Again, no psychology. But if Tozawa came back and you were pressing that this is a much more serious, focused Tozawa, and he beats people time after time after time after time after time, eventually you might say, well, maybe I will believe. So I do think Vince McMahon's idea was better in this case, Mike.
I think so, too, and that's the thing. I mean, it's not – look, Seth may be 20, 25, 30 pounds bigger, but that's negligible difference, you know, between him and Ciampa, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we know what Ciampa was before he left. It's a slow build that we need to happen here, and that's the thing. Now – you know, and Vince, I mean, we've talked about Vince's when he was in charge before, or supposedly in charge before, about his instincts being kind of dull because he stepped back and took a step, couple steps back from being in creative, right? Well, apparently, apparently those instincts are back.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I know modern wrestling fans are like, well, I want Ciampa to be up front. I want Ciampa to be this, that, and the other thing. Here's what you got to understand. This is the WWE. It's not NXT. Not NXT. Unless Tommaso Ciampa can come up with a very compelling character that fans believe and care about, his wrestling ability is not going to carry him in WWE because it's not enough. The Usos were busting their ass and arguably one of the best tag teams in the world for how many years? How many? Putting on great match after great match. We said on this show a million times, my God, every one of their matches are fantastic. They still weren't superstars. You know when they were superstars? The Bloodline. When they became characters that we all cared about. You know when Sami Zayn became a superstar? He hasn't wrestled any differently. Sami Zayn hasn't improved as a wrestler. You know what improved? His character. The storyline that he got involved with highlighted his character, showed a personality that the fans took to, and it elevated him. Has nothing to do with how good his Helluva kick is. Has nothing to do with how good in the ring he was. Has to do with the character and the storyline he was involved in and how well he played that character. So that's what you have to do with all of these guys. I've said it a million times. I'll say it one more time. With very few exceptions, there's probably nobody in either WWE, AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, NWA, you name it. There's probably not a handful of people who couldn't put on a five-star match or a match that would have fans standing on their feet if they were cut loose and told you can do it. But the difference is this. You've got to have the fans care. You can't just say, I've never heard of this guy in my life, but he's a five-star wrestler. Never heard of this guy in my life. He's a five-star wrestler. They're going to wrestle. And you might walk out of that match saying, that was a really good match. Those guys are excellent. But you wouldn't be on your feet because you'd say, I really don't care who's winning. There's no storyline. There's no reason they're fighting. There's two really good athletes who fought. Okay, that's fine. And occasionally that'll be fine. But that's not what elevates you to a superstar status. What elevates you is a storyline and the characterization. That's what does it. If you don't believe me, who's the top guys? Name me all the top guys. Every single one of them have a huge storyline that promoted their character. Right? We could just promote Chad Gable as, listen, this is a guy who was a gold medal wrestler. No gimmick needed. It wasn't until he started doing the Alpha Academy and the thank yous and all that kind of stuff that people started to care. Kurt Angle was the same way until Kurt Angle became that character that everybody remembers and loves. People were just like, yeah, we get it. So this is the problem. There's a very small handful of superstars who aren't great characters. Name the top guys in wrestling of all time. 90% of them are characters. Not great wrestlers necessarily. Some of them are both. But the majority of them are going to be great characters first, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. And here's the huge contrast of the WWE now and the WWE back then, not even that long ago, but even to an extent AEW as well. But I'll contrast. WWE doesn't build up anything because they don't have to. They used to have to build stuff up to get those eyes on the product, to get pay-per-view buys. Now it's a streaming service. So I'm going to make an example. We all loved, at least I speak for myself, when I was out of my seat, on the edge of my seat, during the Shawn Michaels versus Kurt Angle. Why? Because they built it, and they built it, and they built it, and they built it. You wanted to see the last match. They tied 1-1. You wanted to see that rubber match, and God help you if you missed it, because they didn't repeat Monday Night Raw back then. That was not only psychology, but that was the build, and it made people care. I don't see anything like that anymore, and it's a lost art. You could stand on your feet all you want for two guys, you know, Joe Brown and Jim Smith, who have a fantastic wrestling match. What's the point?
That's what I mean. See, that's the thing. Name the top wrestling wrestlers of all time, the most high-profile top guys, you know, The Rock character, Stone Cold Steve Austin character, The Undertaker character, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Randy Savage, all characters. Dusty Rhodes, the character. Ric Flair is a character. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat's a character. They're all characters. Now, I don't mean characters like a wrestling plumber or a wrestling teacher or a wrestling drill instructor. I get that that was hokey. But what was Macho Man Randy Savage? You tell me that's not a character? Do you honestly think that the Macho Man Randy Savage was walking around Walmart for groceries saying, oh, yeah, grapes are on sale, brother? I mean, you know, he didn't do that. So this is what I'm saying. The top guys understand I have to do something to make that crowd love or hate me for the character I'm portraying. I told everyone, the day you solidified the bloodline angle, the day I said this is gold and it's going to make a bazillion dollars, was the day that Sami Zayn cracked up the bloodline when he said he's not feeling very oozy, and everybody broke character and laughed. And some people were saying it's very unprofessional to break character. I said, no. What he's just done is endeared himself to all the fans, and now everybody's like, we would like to see them be one big happy family. We'd like to see them all be like this, where they're joking and happy and laughing. But deep down inside, you knew it wasn't going to happen. Deep down inside, you knew that Roman was going to do something treacherous, and you cared. That's how this works, Mike. So I don't understand the people who think you don't have to be a character.
Right. You don't have to be. You're telling me Hook isn't a character. You're telling me, you know, Otis isn't a character. I mean, look, we know what they're trying to do with Chad Gable right now. He may live 50-50, but that's not his goal right now. That's not the character's goal right now. The character's goal right now is to be a teacher and to get Maxine ready for her first actual match. That's his character right now, right? I mean,
yes.
Sting originally wanted to be Steve Flash Borden, right? Didn't work. It only worked when he became what? Sting.
Yeah. How about the ringmaster, Steve Austin? Hey, that really worked. Hollywood Blondes worked for a little while, but what is he remembered as? Stone Cold. Same wrestler. How is the Blue Blood, Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley working? How is Terror Rising working? How is Vinny Vegas working? Right? You had to find that something in you that connected with the fans, and when you did that, then you got gold. That's why Sami Zayn had gold. Now, Sami Zayn's gold's going away because he no longer has that compelling storyline. So all he's getting right now is the residual effect of, we remember when Sami was in the bloodline and he was really cool and really funny, and that's great. We love to watch that. So we still like him, but that's going to start waning unless you give him another good storyline. It's going to start waning. I'm telling you. So we'll have to see where this goes. But yes, it's crucially important. For wrestlers, if there's any, I know a lot of indie wrestlers listen to this show. It is crucially important that you develop a character. Again, it doesn't have to be a wrestling plumber or a wrestling dentist, but it has to be a character. It has to be something that fans say, I don't like that guy. I really honestly don't like that guy. Or, man, I really do like that guy. He's cool. You have to do one of the two. You really do. Otherwise, you're just another brick in the wall, as you know, Pink Floyd would say. Wrestlers are a dime a dozen. Great wrestlers are a dime a dozen. The same way with music, right? Great musicians are a dime a dozen. Great singers are a dime a dozen. I've been to karaoke bars where I said, listen to that person sing. That person's 100 times better than Rob Zombie. Rob Zombie's got a gimmick. Rob Zombie's got a look. Rob Zombie's got a brand. Right? He doesn't just come out there and say, okay, my next song's called Dragula, and here we go. No, he doesn't do that. Even subtly, other artists that aren't heavy metal does that. Bob Dylan's always had a gimmick, right? He was this, I'm this poet, hippie, traveling, you know, minstrel type guy. You know, he probably really isn't. Look at Bruce Springsteen. Oh, I'm a working class blue collar guy, you know, racing cars in the street and getting my hands dirty and yeah. And now we know who you really are, and you're not even close to that. But that's the gimmick. That's the thing you portrayed for how long? And it worked. So it is crucially important at the end of the day you're selling yourself. That's exactly what you're doing. Anyway, let's get on to some more of the wrestling news. There's not too much real major news except the preview for tonight's episode of SmackDown, which, unless I am wrong, Mike, isn't that in your neck of the woods near the Cajun Dome in Lafayette?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I've been there. You know, I've been to a WWE event in the Cajun Dome. Now, that just was 25, 30 years ago. But yeah, I've been there. It's a pretty sizable place. It's, you know, I would say 25,000, 35,000, whatever it is, seats. Not including what they would put on the floor, of course. But yeah, it's a pretty big place to hold, and it's a pretty loud place. So expect that crowd's usually raucous in the Cajun Dome. So expect a loud crowd, you know, expect a boisterous crowd, you know, expect a very good show, a very good performance by the wrestlers, because they're going to want to perform for this crowd that's going to be this raucous crowd, you know.
Well, it's going to be interesting because the two feature matches, as far as I know, are both women's. And we'll see how that plays out. I know we got the WWE and NXT Women's Tag Team Championship Unification Match. Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler versus Alba Fire and Isla Dawn. Isla Dawn, Isla Dawn, whatever. That should be interesting. I guess my problem with that is, I don't know whether they're going to put Ronda and Shayna on NXT. I've been hearing some stuff about that they'll defend in different places. Ronda Rousey has said on some occasion she really wants to make the women's tag team title mean something. This is very interesting because instead of the approach of a, you know, Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks, who basically said, I'm taking my ball and going home because you aren't making anything of the women's division. Ronda Rousey said, give me the titles. Let's go do this. And if we have to unify them, and we'll go to NXT and we'll go to SmackDown and we'll go to Raw, whatever we got to do, let's get it done so there's an actual division. Good for her. Good for her if she's doing that. And then we got Bayley versus Shotzi with a spot in the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match on the line. I know that. And I believe Baron Corbin and Cameron Grimes are going to have a match. That's three matches, and it's only a two-hour program, so I don't think there'll be too many more matches, Todd, but those are the feature ones for tonight. Which one are you looking most forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Women's Unification Tag Team Championship match.
Yeah, me too. I want to see how they're going to play that out. Because Alba Fire and Isla Dawn just barely got there. And if they drop their championship, then they barely got the championships, right? If they drop them, then we know this was the plan all along. That's why they called them up. They basically said, we're going to take the titles off the champions, give them to this group. They're going to call them up, and we're going to give them to Shayna and Ronda. That was probably all in the plan, if that's the case. I do not see Alba Fire and Isla Dawn beating Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. I do not see that. However, I do think this is clever because Shayna Baszler established herself very well in NXT. And Ronda, to my knowledge, was never there. But Shayna's a big name there. People remember her, and people remember what she accomplished. And she was really, really, really at the top of her game in NXT. She was someone they let slide through the cracks in WWE. She could have been one of the top heels of all time in the women's division in WWE, and they let it slip through the cracks. This could be a resurgence, and this could be a very good thing, Tom, if they let the women's champions travel to all the shows, all the federations.
You bring up a great point because Shayna Baszler was pretty much the women's division in NXT. Not pretty much. She was the NXT women's division. And WWE got her, and they started off with her, you know, like a ball of fire, but now she was relegated to, you know, being rolled up, and it was just really stupid. I'm looking forward to the tag team women's match, but I don't want to see the NXT ladies get beat so quickly. It would be so much better. Yeah, you got the unification title match on SmackDown tonight, but don't give it a definitive ending. Let it go. Build it up more. Give us a reason.
Maybe they won't. Maybe none of the belts will change hands tonight. That's very possible, and that they'll continue this feud in NXT. However, at some point, if you promise a unification, it's got to be unified. You can't just say, well, we had a unification match, and it was kind of like there was a non-ending, so we're just going to forget that idea. Well, you can't do that. You promised the fans a unification, so you might as well give it to them. If you want Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey to win, which is very interesting because as far as I know, now I don't watch NXT on a regular basis. I scan it, you know, because it's just too much to do. But Mike, am I wrong in saying that Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, they're heels, aren't they?
They are heels, yes. Yes, and that's going to be an interesting match, but what's piqued my interest is the Corbin and Rollins match. After what I saw happen on NXT on Wednesday night with Corbin when he was trying to make fun of all the characters Corbin played, and they got around to Happy Corbin, and Corbin goes, well, that made me I got a $1.8 million house out of this, that character, so you tell me what's good, right? That's
right.
Big. He's acknowledging the fact that it maybe was a bad character, but he's also acknowledging the fact that he made a lot of money on that character. It made him a good bit of money, so... And it was a good character. So it's going to be interesting. I know they want Cameron Grimes to be something, and I know they want Corbin to be something, but how they get there is that's going to be interesting because you don't want, after that good promo on Wednesday night, you don't want him to lose that quickly, but you still want Grimes to be something. So that's going to be an interesting match, how they juggle that tonight.
I agree with you. I think that is going to be something interesting to watch. We already know that Corbin, I guess, is going to return to his lone wolf character pretty soon, which probably means Grimes wins. Grimes is also not the biggest guy in the world, but Grimes has that Daniel Bryan thing going where fans will root for him. He always, no matter what situation you put him in, Cameron Grimes is like, well, he's the underdog. He's not the guy you think is going to win. Even tonight, you know, you say, oh, look at the size difference. He's the underdog. I do think that Cameron Grimes is better suited to the WWE. I don't think he's going to be, you know, WWE World Champion. But can he be a successful character and a high mid-carder or maybe even a minor champion? Yeah. Yeah, he absolutely can be, because I think he's one of those people that the fans will take to. He has that personality. He reminds me a lot of Daniel Bryan personality-wise. Not wrestling-wise necessarily, some, but personality-wise, he has that exuberance. And he has that underdog feel to him that fans like. So, yeah, I think Grimes could go places here in the WWE, Todd.
No, that's me. I like Cameron Grimes. I think that they brought him up at just the right time. They're feuding him with the right person because Baron Corbin and Cameron Grimes is going to be a good match. And that's kind of what I'm kind of looking forward to that because I want to see where it goes. We know because of the internet, of course, that Baron's going to go back to his lone wolf. But I want to know what's the ending, what's the end game tonight, and what's next for Cameron Grimes. And we're all going to be waiting for Baron to come back as that lone wolf to get his, quote unquote, revenge.
Yeah, we got to see where the storyline is going to go. So this could be the beginning of the next chapter. So that's why it's interesting. Here's something interesting. Apparently the WWE brought up LA Knight from NXT strictly to be a manager. And the reason that they did that is they said, well, his age. We don't really see him as an in-ring guy at this stage of his career. So we're just going to run with him as a manager. He convinced them to let him wrestle a little bit. And they had originally said, well, okay, you know what? He's a warm body. He can talk a little on the mic. He'll go in there, and he's basically a guy who's – remember when they did that with MVP? They let MVP go in first before he started managing, and he'd wrestle, and he'd lose. He'd put up a decent fight, but he'd lose because of his age. And they were just kind of saying, you know what? You're a warm body to feed to some guys who are promoting. And that's exactly what they wanted LA Knight to be. It was the fans that changed their mind. And, of course, the fans' minds were changed by how good LA Knight is on the microphone. Not how good he is in the ring, how good he is on the microphone. Remember what we said earlier? When he came out, the fans just absolutely took to him. And the WWE's now changed their mind. And the WWE feels maybe we can get a really good run out of him. And now he's in Money in the Bank, isn't he? And I would tell you that I think he's the favorite to win. I know Damian Priest is also up there. And they've thrown Logan Paul at us as a curveball. Logan Paul's not winning it. I would be very shocked if Logan Paul wins it. Because we've already been there, done that. He's already fought Seth Rollins. He's already fought Roman Reigns. Going to have a rematch based on a Money in the Bank? No, I don't think so. It's either LA Knight or Damian Priest. And I'm starting to lean toward LA Knight. And if LA Knight does this, this is the same thing that happened to Becky Lynch. Becky Lynch was on her way to being a heel, losing to Charlotte Flair and probably heading toward Palookaville. And the fans would not have it. The fans took to her in such a way that they said, we can't ignore this. We have to run with this. And they ran with it. And look at Becky Lynch. How long has she been on the top of the division? Even if she's not the champion, she's still considered, top of the game, right? I would argue that Asuka or Bianca Belair being the champion still probably don't draw as good as Becky Lynch if she's on the card. Well, LA Knight can be that guy. And I truly think that if he does get any modicum of success here in the WWE, Mike, you can truly say it was the fans that did it.
Yeah, the fans did it. Just like the fans did it for Becky Lynch. I mean, how many different things did she go through?
Yep.
Until she became the man, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then she's basically back to being the man again, Yeah, a little bit smaller version of herself, but that's neither here nor there. She's back to being the man again, and the fans have taken to her again. And that's the thing. This is a guy. We've said it about LA Knight before. This is a guy that can get himself over in the mic, and he could be, if they play him right, he could be Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Absolutely 100%. So we'll see. We'll see how much faith they have in LA Knight. It'll be interesting to see how much they listen to the fans. Anyway, a little AEW news. Supposedly a top star who wishes to remain anonymous, I guess, told some dirt sheets that the mood in the locker room after CM Punk's rehiring is not good. And was quoted as saying, you know, they separated him. They said he was only going to be on the one show, and now they're all of a sudden they're saying, no, he's going to come on Dynamite. Or he's going to make an appearance on Dynamite. And already some of the people are saying, look, this is a ticking time bomb. It's just a matter of time until this implodes. And they don't like it. That's one guy's take. The ratings are in, and the Saturday Night Show Collision did a little over 800,000 people, about 8.5, actually. So that's a good number, and we expected that number to be good. I want to see how they do week after week after week to see if they keep that 850,000 or if they start sliding backwards again. But that's a very admirable number for a Saturday night. So at least temporarily it worked. However, if you are sowing seeds of division in the locker room and these quote-unquote top stars are saying, yeah, here we go again. We were told by Tony Khan we're going to keep him separated. He's going to be at Collision. Then all of a sudden it's, well, I guess he's coming to Dynamite. And they're not happy. I don't know. You know, I put on my Nostradamus cap and I say to myself, how many times does history have to repeat itself? You're dealing, and I'm not just picking on CM Punk. You are dealing with a business that has a ton of guys in it who have huge egos. Huge. And when those egos clash, it's a ticking time bomb. There are guys like a Daniel Bryan or an AJ Styles and them type of guys who really don't have that ego. They just understand the business and say, yeah, it is what it is, and we do what we do. But there's more that don't see it that way. There's more that it's about me and I'm this. And I'm, yeah, well, you get a lot of those guys. CM Punk's one of them, but there's more. And if you mix, you know, if you try to put out fire with gasoline, Mike, the result usually isn't very good. And I feel like that's what AEW is trying to do.
Yeah, I feel like that too. We'll see what happens with the ratings. And we know eventually, we know if the rumors are true and they do this, we know eventually what's going to happen, and he's going to run afoul of somebody, if not the Young Bucks again, maybe, I don't know. But we'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it, but we know it's going to happen. And number the other thing that I saw as I was tooling around the Internet, Marcus, is that apparently the WWE is looking at Hook.
Yes. I was just going to mention that, Mike. Hook is one that they're looking at especially. I don't know if it's for NXT or WWE. I would hope NXT first.
Yeah, I would hope so too. You know, and apparently his dad wants him in the WWE. So, you know.
Yeah, because that's, again, these guys that Tony Khan is featuring, with the exception of a couple, they got their popularity in the WWE. That's where people heard their name. That's why they have a marquee name. That's why they have a drawing power, right? Because of that. Now, I'm hearing that Jungle Boy, who may be turning heel soon, he's going in this forbidden door against, one of the Japanese wrestlers who basically said, I've never heard of him. I have no idea why he qualifies to come after my title. That's not good. Could be a shtick. I don't know. That could be shtick. Something else that could be shtick is Sheamus has taken to social media to basically say, if I'm not a pretty big part of Money in the Bank or this, you know, European tour, I'd love to know why. I'm one of the more popular guys there. And I don't understand why I'm being left out of the party, and I'm not happy about it. Now, this could be a gimmick, Tom, but it's odd to hear Sheamus speak out like that because he doesn't do it much.
Yeah, that actually, I did read that, and that actually took me by surprise because Sheamus is not really one to complain. Now, I put my my conspiracy theorist hat on and go, he could just be playing us. Why would he put that on? It could be a gimmick. It could be a gimmick change. This could be his last run. That could be the reason why he gets chosen to be, to get the championship, maybe from Gunther, maybe from, you know, whoever it is. That could very well be a reason, but it could also be legitimate. So, again, we go back to this psychology thing. Do we really know? We don't, but we want to find out.
We don't. If it's true, he certainly has the right to be upset because he's 100% right, Todd. If it's a gimmick, it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Well, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about Sheamus and everything. And if it's not a gimmick, so he's complaining about not being on the in London, England for that Money in the Bank or the tour of Europe, it could be big trouble.
Well, we'll see where this goes. I just thought it was interesting and also interesting is that they're saying Drew McIntyre may make an appearance. And with Sheamus complaining and Drew McIntyre scheduled to make an appearance, I have to think they're going to get tied in somehow. I have to think it. Should be kind of interesting. Here's what you should be happy about if you're a wrestling fan. You know, we can sit here and we can complain about CM Punk. We can complain about ring psychology. We can complain about all the stuff, but the good news is AEW's new TV show actually did a good first rating. We'll see where it goes. We got a Money in the Bank that fans are actually interested in because we may see the emergence of a new star, not too new, but you know what I'm talking about. He's kind of an older guy, but a new star in WWE. There's some unification in the works that could help the women's division. There's a lot to be, glad about here lately, Mike.
Yeah, there's a lot to be glad about, and if we're gonna end up seeing Sheamus versus Drew McIntyre again, that's exciting to me. And there are also, other than some of the wrestlers, there are also female wrestlers that have their contracts in respective companies coming up that may be headed to the WWE anyway. And we'll see there. And
by the way, Morrison signed a contract with AEW. It's not just the first, a pay per performance. He signed a contract, Mike. So Morrison, now a member of AEW, I think they're going to call him Johnny TV.
Yeah. How many different names has that guy had? I mean, really? I mean, it makes sense, though. His wife is there, you know.
Yep.
So it makes sense for him to be there. But, I mean, what's next? Johnny TV, Johnny Television, Johnny whatever, you know. I don't know.
If you collect all of his action figures under his names, you'd have 150 of them, apparently. So, anyway, folks, enjoy SmackDown tonight. We'll be back here on Sunday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.